Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 113 event, which takes place in Glasgow, Scotland. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last events, we won 2.68 units for UFC 213 and the Tough 25 finale after going 2-2 on our premium bets. We also lost our half unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 113 features a 12 fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Sunday afternoon. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off in the women's bantamweight division on Fight Pass is about between Leslie Smith, who is 9-7-1, and UFC newcomer Amanda Lemos, who is 6-0-1. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Leslie Smith, -150. The comeback on Lemos at +110. Right now, looking over sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. It is currently Smith, -190. The comeback on Lemos at +165. So a little bit more action coming in Smith's way. Not really that surprised. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know, not really knowing Lemos that good. Obviously, she's making her UFC debut. And then Smith obviously got a little bit of respect recently coming off of her impressive, I mean, you got to say it's impressive, victory over Aldana. Aldana, very hyped prospect. And the pace that Smith pushes alone in fights, her aggressiveness and her IQ really is pretty impressive. I mean, she's a savvy, savvy veteran that's been in the cage with a lot of good, talented ladies. So her experience and just her pressure overall does it really well. Now, to me, for Smith, I'm not really that impressed with her overall skill set, though. I mean, it's not like she's the best boxer in the world. She's not the best grinder out there. She just puts it all together okay and pushes a high pace. But there's nothing clear that stands out, and she has a huge edge over her opponents, other than, again, that will to win and the pace that she does push. Lemos, on the other hand, is a little bit more talented, in my opinion. I know she's taking this fight on short notice, and again, there's a lot of information out there. A lot of people haven't really seen too much of Lemos out there. She's a jungle fight veteran, so she's coming in from a pretty decent organization in Brazil, but the level of competition for Lemos overall, I've been disappointed. It hasn't been that high yet. I mean, she's only 6-0-1, I should say, in her career thus far, so she's still, you know, trying to make a run and trying to establish herself a little bit and getting this shot on short notice in the UFC. But her skill set's not bad. I mean, I've been very impressed with what I've seen thus far from Lemos. I think overall, she's a pretty decent fighter. She's a bit undersized for the division at 135 pounds. We should mention that right away as well. But she does have some nice kickboxing skill. Her knee attack especially, she has really good timing with her knees. She does go for takedowns as well. And once she has you on the ground, she likes to work from top position and then tries to take your back or tries to get a better position to do more damage or even look for the subs. Now, submissions aren't really where it's at for her, and for the most part, when she gets on the ground, she likes to really drop some ground and pound and try to finish fights that way, or even on the feet. I mean, if you look at her striking, it is fun to watch. I mean, she's aggressive. She's clean so far from what I've seen as well. She is a southpaw, so you throw that in the mix, and that's something that she has going for her as well. But overall, she still needs a little bit more work on her takedown defense, especially. I mean, I think that her ground game overall, her wrestling, it's okay, but she needs to work on that area a little bit more than where she's at right now. So that's what she needs to keep on developing. But because if this fight stays on the feet, even though Smith puts the pressure on, and I think Smith will have some success on the feet, I think Lemos could definitely land more punishment and do more damage on the feet as well along the way. So this is going to be a tough fight for her debut. She is making it on short notice, so we're going to have to see where her cardio is at. And of course, again, the veteran of Smith, her experience, everything that she brings to the table, you have to lean a little more towards Leslie Smith, but everybody kind of betting her right now, I don't know. I think Lemos is one of these prospects that, I mean, at age 30, it's tough to say she's a real prospect, but in MMA years, at least she is, really. I think she's going to continue to improve, and she's going to be a very dangerous opponent, even for the likes of Leslie Smith. So my pick is Smith, but there's no way I would bet it. Even at minus 190, I would definitely stay away from it at this point and see how good Lemus makes her debut. So my pick is Smith, but I think it's a dog or pass situation and likely a pass.
Lemus looked pretty decent watching her fight on in her bouts in Brazil. I mean, she has pretty solid technical striking, pretty good kicking ability. I think she definitely should have the low kick power advantage against Leslie Smith if she can get some leg kicks going. And she has a bit of a nasty ground game if she can get a hold of a neck, dive for a guillotine choke or something. So, you know, from what I've seen with her, she's a pretty decent fighter, but as Nick mentioned, she is going to be very undersized. I mean, Leslie Smith is 5 inches taller, should have a decent reach advantage over her as well. And the thing that Smith does so well is she just puts a pace on her opponent, especially in fights when she's not worried about getting taken down. And she shouldn't worry about that here. Like, Lemus really gets her guillotine choked when people are trying to get takedowns against her. So, with Leslie Smith in this fight, I mean, Lemus is probably just going to want to stand and trade, and it's going to be difficult for Lemus to get that kicking action going if Smith is just in her face repeatedly launching combinations. I thought Leslie Smith put on the performance of her career in her last bout against Irene Aldana. I mean, Aldana has a lot of power and was a good technical striker, and Smith just walked her down for 15 straight minutes and even dropped her at one point with a really nasty right hand. Smith has good head kicks, and she just overwhelms her opponents with the ridiculous amount of high volume and pace that she can put on. Now, when she faces people that hit really hard and can fight and fire right back at her, she gets in trouble. But I don't think Lemus has that punching power to do that. And, like a Cyborg did or a Sarah Kaufman did in the rematch. So I just think what happens here is Leslie Smith just walks Lemus down and pressures her repeatedly, uses that size and reach, and Lemus is going to get really frustrated over the course of 15 minutes, and I see Leslie Smith win in a decision at some point, if not wearing her down enough to get a TKO. So my pick is going to be Leslie Smith. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a bantamweight contest between Brett Johns, who is 13-0, and Albert Morales, who is 7-1-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Johns, minus 270, the comeback of Morales at plus 190. Looking over at Five Dimes right now, it is currently Johns minus 370, the comeback of Morales is at plus 310. So I thought I was opening the line high enough to keep people at bay a little bit, but not necessarily the case because they're coming in on Johns, and it's hard to argue it, especially from what we've seen from both. In my opinion, Johns is a really promising fighter. Obviously, he's got some really solid experience thus far, and he's made his successful UFC debut as well. But the experience that I'm referring to has been in the Titan Fighting organization. I mean, he looked really good on Titan. He also, before that, was fighting on the Cage Warrior cards as well. So he has really good experience outside of the UFC that you could tell the potential that he really has. An ultimate grinder type of fighter that has good stand-up to go along with it. Very good fight IQ, pushes a relentless pace. It just everything you want to see in a fighter. I mean, the heart, the conditioning, everything's there with him. I mean, he has a bright, bright future, especially at age 25. So the pace that he usually sets is just relentless, and it's going to be hard for a lot of people to take, including Morales. In fact, Morales stepping in on short notice, I think that's going to be a problem for him here in this spot. I think Morales has actually looked pretty good. He's had his ups and downs so far in the UFC, but the guy definitely has some skill as well. I got a ton of respect for him. I mean, the guy is a dangerous striker on the feet. He's got some length to go along with it for the weight class especially. He has good wrestling. I mean, overall, the talent is there for him. He's only 26 years old, so he's going to get better. The problem with Morales is his conditioning seems to let him down. As you get into round two, round three, it gets a little bit tougher for him, and that's when people can really start taking over. Now, of course, I realize he got knocked out by Almeida, and that was early in round two, but Almeida could have ended the fight in round one, too. I mean, that guy just has that special kind of knockout power. But beyond that, if you look at his fight with Perez, that's kind of what you see in him. I mean, he does tend to fade a little bit. He was doing better early on in that fight, and as the fight progressed a little bit, he let Perez back in that fight, and it ended up coming close. Even in his last fight, that he actually won by split decision over Sugmantad, that was a tough fight as well. I think that he was looking good again early on in that fight, but after he started fading a little bit in round two into round three, he gave a lot of that fight back. So that's what you get from Morales. If he can get that cardio and conditioning in check, man, the guy would be scary at 135 because he does have the talent. He's got that knockout power. Like I said, he's got the wrestling to back it up typically as well. So what I think plays out here is we're going to see a pretty competitive fight, especially early on. And Johns has to be careful because on the feet, Morales is going to do some damage and he's going to bring it. So Johns cannot take him lightly at all. Johns is going to have to look for those takedowns. It's not going to be easy either because Morales does have pretty good takedown defense. So that's not going to be, I think, a walk in the park for Johns either. But I think as the fight progresses, Johns, with his fight IQ and his ability, is going to probably time the takedowns well, maybe pin him up against a cage, get him down a time or two, maybe hold him there once he gets him down, and kind of play it out that way. So I think Johns basically outpoints Morales. And as the fight progresses a little bit, it probably gets a little bit easier for Johns as it goes. So I think the people are in agreement. That's why they're coming in and betting him as well. I don't know if there's value at over 3-1 on Johns, though, honestly, especially against a talented, dangerous fighter like Morales. At this point, I think it's a good stern test for Johns, so I would just stay away. But I do think Johns gets the victory here. And it's just a guy you want to watch out for sure, in a bantamweight division. He could be a sleeper. He could be the dark horse to make a title run, especially if he keeps on improving. I mean, he definitely has the mentality to do so, and it looks like he's got the skill that can back it up as well. So bright future ahead for Johns, and I do think he wins this fight.
If this fight stays standing, it should be pretty competitive. I mean, Morales, he throws hard when he fights. I mean, he throws so hard that he gasses himself out, and he is pretty wild, but Johns isn't exactly a world beater on the feet, so it should be a very interesting back and forth battle for however long it stays standing. But what really matters is Brett Johns' takedown ability. I mean, when this guy wants to, he gets people on the floor and takes them out. Whether it just be riding it out to a decision, ground and pound, looking for submissions, Johns is a very well-rounded fighter, and against Morales, Why play with fire? I mean, Johns is a decent striker, but Morales has heavy hands and he swings crazy. And if one of those random bombs just hits him on the temple or right on the chin, and that's fight over. So why even take the risk? If I'm Johns, I only stand with Morales long enough to find an opening to get this fight to the ground, whether it be shooting in for and pushing him into the fence, getting it to the floor, and then once you're there, just wear Morales down. I think that there's plenty of opportunities there. Morales has shown pretty good takedown defense so far, but he hasn't faced somebody with the grappling acumen and wrestling ability of Johns yet in his UFC career. For the most part, he's faced guys that want to keep it standing. Overall, I mean, Morales is a good fighter, but he's taking this fight on short notice, and I haven't been that impressed with him, especially with the fact that he just pushes too hard for the finish and gasses himself out. And I think that's another thing that Johns can take advantage of for sure. Just make Morales work, duck under some of those ridiculous haymakers he throws, and there should be plenty of opportunities for takedowns. So my pick is definitely going to be the pikey, Brett Johns. Now moving on to the first bout on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a lightweight contest between a pair of UFC newcomers in Danny Henry, who is 10-2, and Daniel Tamer, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Tamer, -210, the comeback on Henry at +160. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it's Tamer -220. The comeback on Henry is at +180, so not a lot going on here. I mean, a lot of unknown factors coming into this fight, both guys making their UFC debuts. So I think a lot of people are just applying some caution and staying away from this. The sports books have not been getting pounded with action either way in this fight. And I think it's reasonable not to at this point, especially with the unknowns about Henry. I mean, that's where I guess I'm going to start first. He is the UFC featherweight champion. The guy has definitely has some talent, has some skill. There's not a ton of footage out there from him, but from the information that's out there, you can kind of put together the puzzle a little bit and see that he's a very capable fighter. I think there's a lot to like about him, really, because he has a well-rounded fighter overall. He's got some length for 145 pounds. And really, he's one of those fighters that can do some damage standing up. He has a little bit of power, and you got to kind of get around his reach a little bit. And at the same time, he can get the fight to the ground. And then once on the ground, he's more than capable of submitting you as well. So a very, very well-rounded fighter that's faced actually decent competition outside of the UFC. A lot of times I say, oh, man, this guy's fought all cans or whatnot. That's not really the case with Henry. And again, the competition level is going to be a little bit lower, but he's faced some fighters that have been decent and that can push him and get him a little bit better. So that's good to see from Henry. Tamer, of course, on the other hand, is the brother of David. I mean, David Tamer is an outstanding, outstanding fighter in the UFC, on the UFC roster already. We know that. I mean, he's been able to pull off some victories, and he's actually coming into his own right now, and he's finally getting the respect he deserves. So with David's popularity and his skill set, a lot of people automatically assume that Daniel's going to be just along the lines, the same type of fighter, maybe a little bit different, obviously, but he's going to definitely have some potential and ability. And he does. I mean, there's no doubt. He's just shorter, stockier fighter for sure. But the guy packs a lot of power in his little frame, man. I mean, he's skilled on the feet, just like his brother as well. He's got knockout power. He's got really good kickboxing. He's got good timing, good counterattacks as well. The thing I also like about Daniel is that he's able to get the fight to the ground. His wrestling is really not that bad. And then once on the ground, he actually attacks and goes for subs like crazy. I mean, so he's an animal whether he's on the feet or on the ground. So he's a well-rounded fighter as well. So a lot to like about Tamer here. And that's why I think this is going to be a good fight. This is the sleeper fight for me on this whole card, because you have two talented guys making their UFC debut, and both guys are capable of pulling off this win here. So I think it'll go back and forth. I mean, you can make a case for either guy, but you have to like Tamer, I think, a little bit more. I think he's going to do a little bit more damage on the feet, and I think if he wants to get the takedowns along the way, he can as well. So I think he basically outpoints Henry. I think Henry's tough enough to survive. I don't think Tamer finishes Henry. And I think Henry's going to give it his all and obviously make it a fight here. So it's not going to be a walk in the park for Tamer, but I do think that it's Tamer's fight to win or lose. And he probably does edge him out on the scorecard. So my pick is going to be Tamer, probably by decision.
Yeah, Danny Henry, Daniel Tamer are both fighters that I'm very high on. Henry is a featherweight, and I expect that he'll be dropping down to 145 after this debut. And Tamer, I expect him to stay at 155. I mean, he spent a majority of his career fighting at 150-pound catchweight fights, and most recently moved up to the lightweight division. So watching these guys fight, Tamer is extremely, extremely talented on the feet. He has fast hands, fast kicks. He's explosive. He's powerful. I do not see Danny Henry surviving if they end up going toe-to-toe in the stand-up for extended periods of time. I mean, Henry does have power. He's finished fights with body kicks and straight punches, and he definitely has the ability to do damage, but it just feels like he telegraphs his shots. He doesn't have Tamer's speed, and I mean, speed is so important, and when you're able to get in, land a big shot, and get out, and it just feels like some of the shots that Henry got highlight reel finishes with in fighting in the South African promotion, EFC, that Tamer would have gotten out of the way of those easily. That being said, both guys are pretty talented on the ground. Tamer has picked up multiple submissions, and as has Henry, but from watching them fight, it feels like Tamer is more about the submission than the actual grappling, because it seems like multiple times watching him, he loses position. He allows his opponents to get dominant positions on him in grappling exchanges. And Henry is not quite that way. I mean, Henry, he's been out-grappled before. He's been out-wrestled. But it feels like he puts up more of an effort in scrambles. So I think if these guys are scrambling on the ground, that Henry will get the better of it. And Henry does have fight-ending power. So there is a decent chance that Henry can do something here, but overall, I just like Tamer better. I mean, David Tamer has been a sensation in the UFC's lightweight division, and his younger brother is just as good with a little bit of a better submission game. So I think he's going to make a major impact, and he's probably going to send Henry packing to the featherweight division here with a loss. So my pick is going to be Daniel Tamer. I think he wins, potentially by knockout. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Charlie Ward, who is 3-2, taking on Galore Bufando, who is 4-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Bufando, -230. The comeback on Ward at +170. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Bufando -220. The comeback on Ward +180. So line margins have tightened up. People are pretty much staying away from this fight a little bit as well, similar to the Tamer Henry fight. I think a lot of people just haven't done their homework quite yet, so they're unsure of what these guys are about. Of course, Ward did recently fight in the UFC. He's Conor McGregor's training partner, teammate, friend. So there is definitely some, I don't want to say hype around Ward, but there's, you know, some popularity there as well. I mean, he's getting his shot probably because of the relationship with Conor McGregor, but make no mistake, I mean, Ward is a pretty big, powerful guy for the weight class, and he has some knockout power, and he could definitely do some damage. But skill-wise, obviously, he got floored in his UFC debut against Al Hassan. He got knocked out in the first round early. I think it was less than a minute into that fight. So his chin is definitely a little bit suspect, and he's facing a guy in Bufando that's making his UFC debut. He's been out for about 3 years. Right. But he is a devastating striker. If you haven't looked up Bufando yet, check him out. Go to YouTube and YouTube this guy and look at the highlight reel that this guy really is. Amazing. His martial arts, his karate game, his kicking game is phenomenal. I mean, the guy has speed. He's got power. He's got flashiness. He is a highlight reel just waiting there. I mean, the two losses that he has, he's got a record, I believe, pro record at 4-2. The two losses he has is really based on disqualifications. So he's somewhat unbeaten in a way. Now, that is a concern, though, if you're betting him, especially because the guy needs to be able to control himself and follow the rules, obviously. So, but that's what kind of nasty monster this guy can be, Bufando. But again, 3-year layoff. So I'm sure, hopefully, he's been improving his overall game, which he definitely needs a little bit more work on his ground game. I mean, that's, if any weakness for Bufando, it is on the ground. He can be put on his back a little bit, and he can be controlled, and he does manage, though, thus far in his career against lower level competition to scramble out, even if he does get put on his back and then finish fights anyway. So far it hasn't cost him, but I think Ward here, especially with the SBG camp and the brains around him, are going to tell him, hey, let's get this guy to the ground. You don't want to stand and bang with this guy, or you're going to be on your back with the, you know, looking up at the stars by the end of the night. So he's going to come in looking for the takedowns, and he might be able to get one or two against Bufando. Bufando has to scramble back up and do his thing on the feet. So this is definitely an interesting fight. I mean, Bufando really is a hyped prospect. I mean, he's 35 years old, though. That's the thing. I don't know if it's fair to say prospect, but again, another situation where he's 35 years old, but in MMA years, he's a lot younger, and he's just an athlete. And I mean, his conditioning, everything about him, I mean, if you look at his physique, he does not look like he's 35 years old. So I think he needs to obviously get his fights in quick and move up that ladder fast if he's going to make any kind of run. But man, with that striking, it's hard to deny the potential this guy really has if he could tighten up that, again, that ground awareness and that takedown defense. But he is a freakish athlete that can just explode on you any second and just knock you out with the kicks, or kick or punches, really. So I think Bufando does get the knockout over Ward. So I just think that at one point or another that Ward is going to have to stay up with Bufando, and Bufando is going to land a nasty kick and just put Ward's lights out. I think that's pretty much how it plays out. So can't be a confident pick, though, because of Bufando's time off and his ground deficiency. You got to definitely be careful there. You don't want to really lay over 2-1 on that. But man, I think we're going to see another highlight reel type of knockout, and then maybe the hype will climb a little bit. Not that he's going to get a ton of respect beating a guy like Ward, but it won't hurt, especially if it's a flashy type of knockout. So the pick is Bufando. I kind of hope he gets it, because man, he's going to be fun to watch, especially moving forward. If they match him up with another striker, it's going to be a thing of beauty, really. So even though Ward, you can consider that, again, I think Ward's going to obviously look for those takedowns here. So Bufando, I'm looking forward to seeing him fight another striker that's closer to his caliber in the future. So hopefully it starts off with a win here so we get to see that. So my pick is Bufando, and probably a highlight reel knockout to win.
There's a lot of question marks about Bufando. I mean, as Nick mentioned, the guy is an extremely, extremely talented kickboxer. I mean, he does stuff with his feet that you only see in like Street Fighter, with these insane kicking combinations where he just stays on one foot and just whap, like fires it off like a jab. There's no way that Ward is going to be able to hang with Bufando on the feet, but I mean, it's an MMA fight. You don't have to just stand with somebody on the feet if you don't want to. In Ward's UFC debut, he got matched up against another really nasty powerhouse, but the difference was that Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, you know, he comes from a strong judo background, so he can keep fights standing, at least against non-elite grapplers. And in that fight, I mean, Ward kind of tried to close the distance, and Al-Hassan just completely bashed him. If Ward is able to close the distance against Bufando, I can see him winning. I mean, I'm not saying that he's a world beater or anything, but there are ways to neutralize a fighter that has a really good striking game, and that's to push him into the fence, and that's to take him to the ground. Now, Bufando does have an unbelievable highlight reel. I mean, this guy's been kickboxing for a long time, and in MMA, he's basically undefeated. His two losses are from disqualifications from landing bad strikes. So it's not going to be an easy win for Charlie Ward, but I mean, it's very possible. I mean, even in one of his best highlight reel finishes, when he landed just a vicious, brutal head kick, the first like 5-6 minutes of that fight was just Bufando being pushed into the fence, and it was just a snooze fest. So the path to victory is there for Charlie Ward, is what I'm really trying to say. And he needs to close the distance, get Bufando pressed against the fence, get him on his back, and take that kicking game out of the equation. Because if he doesn't, Bufando is going to kick his head clean off. I mean, this guy is just an absolutely devastating striker. And I honestly, with watching Ward's last fight, I don't know if he has like the athleticism to get out of the way. So, I'm leaning Bufando. I mean, there's just so many question marks with him. He hasn't fought since 2015. As Nick said, he's 35 years old. So, I mean, Ward could walk right through him if he can get this fight to the ground. But, I'm gonna lean Bufando. I mean, there's a lot of, hidden untapped potential with that striking game, and Ward did seem hittable in his last fight. So if Bufando lands something, it might just be all he needs. So my pick is going to be Galore Bufando, but I'm definitely exercising caution here. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Alexander Pantoja, who is 17-2, taking on Neil Seary, who is 16-12. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Pantoja -305, the comeback on Siri at +225. Right now, looking over five dimes, Pantoja is -360. The comeback on Siri is at +300. So a little bit more action coming in Pantoja's way. A lot of parlays involved as well, especially at five dimes. There's no doubt about that. Good fight. I mean, really, to me, Siri's been one of these guys. I mean, the sad thing is he almost has a 500 record, but he's way, way above and beyond that. I mean, the guy's a very talented fighter, a savvy vet. I mean, what he's capable of doing in the cage is pretty impressive against talented fighters as well. I mean, he's never an easy out for anybody, regardless of how high caliber they are. Siri brings it every time. You know what you're getting with the guy. I mean, he goes in there. His striking is good. He's got really good boxing. His wrestling, his takedown defense is solid as well. He's got a bit of a submission game. So he's been a well-rounded fighter. And with all that experience through the years against really good competition, it's made him a really tough out and a very solid fighter. It's sad to see it here because he's going to get a little bit closer to that 500 mark, I think, because Pantoja is probably going to beat him. I just think Pantoja, obviously, he's got the youth advantage. He's about 10 years younger, I believe. And I think across the board, Pantoja is just a little bit better. On the feet, though, it's going to be interesting. If they trade shots back and forth, I think Pantoja might be a little bit more well-versed, but I think Siri's boxing is probably a little bit cleaner and a little bit better. So, and I think his gas tank is a little bit better as well. So that would be interesting. It'll be back and forth war. Again, I do favor Pantoja still there, but underground, I think Pantoja has the edge as well. He can get some of the takedowns, even though Siri has decent takedown defense overall. It's not going to be easy. I think Pantoja can control the ground, and then once on the ground, I think Pantoja is the better ground fighter as well. He's more, a little bit more capable on the ground. So I think it's going to be a very competitive fight wherever it takes place, whether it be stand-up or against the cage or on the floor, wherever it may be. It's going to be a back-and-forth type of fight, but Pantoja is definitely going to be the better fighter of the two. And I think, really, he's going to keep on improving, too. That's the crazy thing. I mean, he's probably not going to get a ton of recognition, and it was a very competitive fight. But Pantoja's fight against Shelton in his last fight was very impressive because Shelton is no joke. I mean, the guy, is definitely a very tough out. I mean, we're going to be learning more about Shelton here soon because he's fighting again against a very talented fighter, but that's another podcast. But the point being, I mean, it's not like Pantoja's fought cans along the way. He's fought very good competition. So I think Pantoja gets the W here over Siri, probably edges him out on the scorecards. And if it is Siri's last fight, I hate to see him go out with a loss, but I mean, he'll be competitive enough that you can't exactly count him out all the way though. So maybe I'm disrespecting him a little bit too much. And who knows, maybe he gets in there and he matches up extremely well, better than we all think against Pantoja. But I do like what I see from Pantoja. And I think that, I mean, the guy can definitely has a skill set to make a run towards the 125 pound title in the flyweight division, obviously. So Pantoja has the skill to do so. I think he's going to keep on progressing and getting better every fight. He's a little bit more dangerous and he's just a little bit better. So my pick is Pantoja to beat Siri and probably on the scorecards.
I've been a big fan of Neil Siri ever since he debuted in the UFC and put on a hell of a performance on short notice. But I think he might have his hands full here. I mean, Alexander Pantoja is 10 years younger than him. I think this might be Neil Siri's retirement bout. He's been talking about retiring for a long time, and the retirement bout keeps getting delayed because his opponents keep having terrible weight cuts. So he's got a lot to fight for. He wants to go out with a win, but Pantoja is definitely a tough, tough test. On the feet, Siri does have really crisp hands, great boxing, pretty good power, and a good pace. So if Pantoja wants to win, he needs to mix it up a little bit. He needs to throw kicks. He needs to close the distance. He needs to look for takedowns. His ground game is phenomenal. So Pantoja, I mean, if he gets it on the floor, there's a decent chance that he could even get a finish here. I mean, Siri has been a very tough out, and almost all of his losses in his career are by decision, if not all of them. Even when he was facing off against some of the best fighters in the world. Like, Siri took on Kyoji Horiguchi and still went to decision despite getting dropped repeatedly in that fight. I mean, this guy is just extremely, extremely tough. So I don't expect Pantoja to get a finish, but what I do expect is Pantoja to land heavy kicks. I expect Pantoja to use his size. He is a little bit longer, a little bit taller. I think he can drag this fight to the floor and then use that ground game to stay in top position, grind out some rounds, and get a decision because Siri, again, is so difficult to finish. I expect Siri is going to put up a tough fight. Pantoja might slow down a little bit, but I don't think it'll be enough. So this is Alexander Pantoja's fight to win. I mean, the guy was, I believe, the top pick on the tough season of champions that decided a number one contender for Demetrius Johnson's belt. So he's a really good prospect. He's got the age, the youth. And I think that Pantoja should be able to win this one. So my pick is going to be Pantoja. Now moving on to the headlining bout of the prelims. We have another welterweight contest. This time features Danny Roberts, who is 13-2, and Bobby Nash, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Roberts minus 175, the comeback on Nash at plus 135. Right now over at Dimes, it is currently Roberts minus 200, the comeback on Nash at plus 170. It did creep up over 200 at one point as well. Nash is starting to get some action back. So two-way action is coming on this fight. Of course, line margins have tightened up here as well. It should be a pretty good fight. I mean, it's unfortunate for Nash the way his UFC debut ended because he was actually looking decent that fight until Jin Ling ended up obviously smashing him and knocking him out, really. I mean, it's just unfortunate because, again, Nash was actually doing pretty good. And he does have a lot of potential. And I'm kind of laughing because, I mean, that's just not what you want to see in your UFC debut for the guy, and especially with a little bit of potential and with his wrestling base that he does have, with the power that he has on the feet. Obviously, he's improving his game. He's a tough out. Nash is a lot better than what he showed, I think, overall. But suffering that knockout loss, it just kind of makes people, I think, really doubt him, especially going up against a fighter like Roberts in your second fight, which in a lot of ways, even though Lee has a lot of power, Jing Li, the person that knocked him out, has a lot of power, and it's not a surprise when he knocks somebody out. Roberts, I think, is a little bit more dangerous because he's a little bit more well-versed. He can submit you. He can knock you out. He's got a little bit more length overall. So Roberts is a dangerous dude. So coming off of a knockout loss and then fighting another finisher – you're probably not going to get a lot of respect, especially with the resume that Roberts has overall. He's obviously been in there with some decent competition. So I think this is a tough fight for both fighters, though. I think that Roberts is probably getting a little bit too much respect. And again, Nash is kind of flying under the radar based on his last performance, a little bit too much disrespect as well. So it should be a competitive fight. I think if it stays standing, obviously Roberts will be a little bit more dangerous. I think he's a little bit more well-versed in his striking. But Nash's hands have some power, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a close competitive stand-up type of matchup. I think what's going to differentiate the two is Roberts has okay takedown defense, but that is also his kryptonite. I mean, he's been put on his back. He's been controlled in fights as well. And I think Nash, with his wrestling background, can and possibly will do that. He will put Roberts. He'll start off obviously striking, and then when he gets the opportunity, he'll probably plant Roberts on his back. And if Roberts is not able to throw up a triangle or an armbar, he'll probably spend a little bit of time on his back, which could obviously rack up some points for Nash. So I'm expecting a competitive fight back and forth. And if Roberts does not finish Nash, I think Nash has the possibility of stealing this fight, especially on the scorecards as well. Or maybe even as it goes, I know both these guys do tend to gas a little bit. I think Nash will be a little bit fresher possibly as it goes into late rounds, and he still has a little bit of power. So we'll see. There's a finish factor here as well, possibly. But I think overall, we're going to see a back and forth type of battle with Nash mixing in some timely takes down. And when he gets those takedowns, it should be enough to probably pull off the upset win. So I know Roberts is going to be dangerous. If there's going to be a finish, I do lean his way, obviously, a little bit more. I think he is a rightful favorite, but I think the lines is a little bit too high. And I think Nash is probably going to be a surprise to most that kind of threw him away and thought that he's not really a legit prospect at this point. So I like what I see from both fighters, but I lean a little bit more towards Nash in this fight. I think he's going to probably come away with a win here.
And I completely agree about Daniel Roberts being, for the most part, a disappointment in his UFC run. I mean, none of his wins have looked overly impressive. He entered the UFC with a wave of hype because he had such flashy knockout ability, some devastating knockout power, and we just really haven't seen it yet. I mean, he throws hard, but he hasn't really been able to connect. His technique hasn't been that good, and he's looked a little bit chinny on the feet with lackluster conditioning and takedown defense. I mean, really, the only thing that was that impressive so far that we've seen out of him was he pulled off a decent triangle choke off of his back when he got taken down by Nathan Coy. So that's something that Nash probably has to look out for a little bit. Now, Bobby Nash, his UFC debut, I mean, he had Li Jianglong in a world of hurt for a little bit. I mean, he had him rocked and hurt on three separate occasions in the first and second rounds of that fight, but and that was just a torrid pace of a fight. And you gotta remember, he took that UFC debut on short notice. So he's got a full training camp for this bout, and I think Bobby Nash just is the more well-rounded fighter of the two. Roberts does have a little bit more punching power, but I think Roberts' chin is at least the same level as Nash's, if not worse. Conditioning-wise, Roberts is definitely the lesser conditioned fighter of the two. And in terms of well-roundedness, definitely like Bobby Nash's wrestling. I mean, the guy wrestled at Michigan State, same place that Rashad Evans and Gray Maynard wrestled out of. So there's a good track record of decent wrestlers transitioning to MMA from the Spartans. And watching Bobby Nash fight, for the most part, he doesn't use his wrestling nearly as much as he should. When you watched the fight against Li Jianglong, I mean, he really only used his wrestling when he was hurt or he had his opponent hurt. I would like to see him use it more reactively when there's just a good opportunity to shoot in with a double leg and get your opponent to the floor. So hopefully he's added that to his game a little bit, because the wrestling is a huge disparity in this fight that he should be able to take advantage of. So I don't know. I mean, it's a tricky fight because on the feet, Roberts might have a slight advantage, but I mean, he's also coming off of a knockout loss, just like Nash. So, granted, he was facing Mike Perry, a guy that's a little bit more known for his striking than Li Jianglong, but, still, Danny Roberts, to me, just has been a bit overrated, and I think that Bobby Nash might be in a position to pull off a bit of a shocking upset. So I'm going to side with Bobby Nash. I think the wrestling does become part of the equation. And even if it doesn't, Nash is probably good enough on the feet to hold his own with Roberts and potentially even win the fight there. So I'm going to side with Bobby Nash. Now moving on to the first fight on the main card on Fox Sports 1. We have a heavyweight contest between James Mulherin, who is 11-1, and Justin Willis, who is 4-1. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Willis, minus 190, and the comeback on Mulherin at plus 150. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Willis minus 210, the comeback on Mulherin at plus 175. So a little bit more action coming in Willis's way. This is an interesting fight. Two big boys. I mean, I know Mulherin is not really the tallest guy for the heavyweight division. I mean, he's only 5'10". Willis, I believe, is only 6'1". He is listed as 6'3" in some places as well. So that's yet to be determined, I guess, overall. But Willis is definitely going to have some size on him. And I think that is going to come into play here as well, because Willis is a pretty sizable, big, heavy, strong, heavyweight fighter. And Mulherin, again, is kind of on the lighter side. I mean, at 245, not really around that weight, not really too light, but as far as, like I said, his height and his stature in general is just a little bit smaller for the heavyweight division. But man, the guy is definitely talented, and I'm looking forward to this fight. I think it's a great matchup, and I'm glad both guys getting their chance in the UFC. Of course, Willis was supposed to step in on short notice and fight Tabura not long ago. I believe it was back at, UFC 208, if I'm not mistaken. But with the short notice, he was medically unclear to fight, so he wasn't able to get that fight. And, I mean, he was getting respect from the bettors back then against a guy like Tabura as well. So I wasn't surprised at all with a little bit of action coming in Willis's way. He trains at a good camp, obviously, with AKA and crew. So he gets to train with the likes of Daniel Cormier, Cain Velasquez. So he's got that wrestling background with a lot of those guys at AKA as well that they do have. And then, of course, he's got some really big power on the feet as well. He's a southpaw. He does throw heavy, heavy hands. He's aggressive. He comes after you. And a lot of times it's the striking is leading to his takedowns and his setup to get the fight to the ground and then just drop some bombs on you when you're on the floor. So that's really Willis's game plan here. He's a big, powerful guy. He wants to get the fight to the floor if possible, if needed. And I think in this fight against Mulherin, it is kind of needed because Mulherin is a pretty impressive striker. If you look back at his resume, again, another situation where he's been outside of the UFC, but he's faced decent competition, all considering, especially in the heavyweight division that's outside of the UFC. He is taking this fight, however, on short notice. He's replacing Godbeer. But again, I think overall, I'm very impressed with what I see on the feet from this guy, especially for his size. He moves pretty well. He's got some surprising speed, a nice leg attack as well with his kicking. I mean, I think that that comes into play. And then again, I mentioned his boxing is pretty fun to watch as well. I think the guy has some speed. He's got some power, and he's precise with that striking. So I think we're going to see a pretty good fight back and forth. Now, Mulherin, if this fight stays upright, I honestly think that, I mean, obviously Willis has that one punch knockout power that he could put anybody out, but Mulherin probably has the edge over on the feet, but it's probably not going to go that way. Mulherin's takedown defense is decent. His ability to scramble up has been okay as well, but I think against Willis, the bigger, stronger fighter here that's going to go after those takedowns and get you on your back, I think that's where it's going to come into play for Willis, and Willis is going to have a little bit more success. So this is a tough one, though. There's no way I would lay the juice. I wouldn't lay chalk minus 210 price against a guy like Mulherin, because even though he's undersized a little bit, the guy makes up for it in skill. So this is definitely a fight that you got to be cautious on if you're betting it. I do think it's probably a dog or pass situation, but it's one that you more so should probably pass because you got two big boys in there. And again, with the short notice and with Willis not getting medically cleared last time, even though he has had more time to prepare for this fight, of course, there's just a lot of things that you got to, I guess, take into consideration. There's a lot more fights that you can bet on this card as well. So for this fight, just sit back, watch, and enjoy. There's probably going to be some type of finish. If not, it'll be probably a fairly exciting fight for three rounds. I mean, these are big boys, but I think that they have the possibility to actually drag it out and go a little bit deeper as well. So we'll see how it plays out. My lean is Willis. I think the wrestling is probably going to be enough here to get him the W, but I mean, not a very confident pick. I want to see Willis fight against decent level competition, and Mulherin's definitely, I think, just that. He fits the bill really good. So if Willis comes out here and does what he can do against Mulherin, looks good doing so, I think that we have a new player in the heavyweight division. So we'll see how it all plays out, but my pick is going to be Willis to beat Mulherin.
This one's pretty straightforward to me. I mean, Mulherin, he is a really undersized heavyweight. I know it says he weighs 250, but that's mainly because, I mean, the guy just bulked up, and not just backing on muscle. I mean, he is a short, stocky heavyweight with good boxing. That's pretty much the MO on the guy. If he can keep fights standing, he usually outboxes his opponents because he has pretty good boxing technique. But it's not like he has, long reach. He doesn't really have a lot of punching power. I mean, honestly, the guy could easily make light heavyweight if he focused on, you know, dieting and everything else. I mean, easily, maybe even middleweight. I mean, he has the body's size to be much smaller and more successful, but he's fighting at heavyweight and he's making it work right now, taking on guys that are bigger and slower that can't really keep his pace. Justin Willis, he's probably going to be slower, and he definitely is bigger, but what he has going for him is he has a good power, he's very physically strong, and he trains at AKA with Daniel Cormier and Cain Velasquez. That does not hurt. He also has a decent wrestling ability, and if he can get Mulherin on the ground, I don't think this fight lasts long at all. Willis has some pretty serious ground and pound. I mean, just devastating finishing ability if he can get on top of his opponent. Willis is, as Nick mentioned, a big guy. I mean, he cuts weight to make the heavyweight limit. His UFC debut was actually delayed because he took the fight on short notice to make his UFC debut, but he couldn't actually make heavyweight. It didn't get medically cleared because he couldn't cut the weight in time. So that's something to consider. But overall, this is a full training camp this time around for Willis. I expect that he gets Mulherin to the ground at some point in the first round and then just starts teeing off on him. But if he doesn't, if he starts to slow down, maybe he gets jet lagged, and then he's not able to get the takedowns anymore, Mulherin could take this fight over. I mean, in Willis's MMA professional debut, back when he was, if you watch the show Fight Factory, that followed around AKA, he did fight in Denver. He started strong in the first round, clearly won the first round, and then he ran out of steam. And his opponent ended up winning a decision against him by winning the next two rounds. So that's something that could happen here. But overall, I think Willis should get this fight to the floor and probably win by TKO at some point. So my pick is going to be Justin Willis. Now dropping down to the light heavyweight division, we have Khalil Rountree, who is 6-2, taking on Paul Craig, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Craig opened the slight favorite, -140, the comeback on Rountree at even money. The bettors out there went crazy. Right now it's -210 on Rountree. The comeback on Craig is at +175. So needless to say, early action was on Rountree. I am a bit surprised in some ways because, I mean, this is each fighter's kryptonite here that they're matched up with. So you do have your striker versus grappler matchup. There's no question about that. So I think in a lot of ways, this is a close to a toss-up type of fight. So, I mean, I hate to say it because I'm not a very big Craig fan, but there probably is a little bit of value on him right now at the current price, because if he's able to get the fight to the ground, there's no question that he has a huge advantage over Rountree on the ground, and he probably gets a submission win here. So I think it's Craig submission, or if he's not able to do that, man, he's in for a short night, because Rountree's, his stand-up is outstanding. He's got a ton of power. You want to talk about kicks and punches being accurate and powerful. That's exactly what Rountree is, a real athlete, explosive. I mean, his ability on the feet is definitely a tough out for most guys at light heavyweight. I mean, a ton of power. He is a southpaw to mix that in as well. So a lot of good things to like about Rountree, and he is the definition of a striker. Now, his takedown defense is actually decent. It's not bad. It's improving. He's been putting the time in, I know, time and time again, but it's still failed him. I mean, along the way thus far, in his losses, he's been put on his back, and obviously he's been grinded out by the likes of a guy like Sanchez. Andrew Sanchez was able to get him down and decision him, basically. And then he was submitted as well recently. And that was to Tyson Pedro, actually. They got him down and submitted him as well. So that's the kind of path to victory Craig is going to have to follow. It's going to have to be like Tyson Pedro did, whether a couple punches early on or get him to the floor and try to take his back and submit him there as well. I think Craig can do that, but I do have a little bit more confidence with Roundtree, honestly, and even from the beginning, even with my opener that I favored Craig a little bit, I still leaned a little bit more personally towards Roundtree myself. So I'm going to lean his way as well. I think that I want to see his improvement on the ground. I know he's been putting in the work, and I want to see it come to play here because Craig isn't exactly the best wrestler out there. I mean, he's another opportunistic guy that is able to get the fight to the floor and then get the finish. So it is a dangerous fight for both guys. I do have a little bit more confidence in Roundtree, but at 210, forget it. There's no way you touch Roundtree. I mean, against the guy that's going to look to take him down and sub him, you stay away from it. So I can understand the line flipping and Roundtree being a slight favorite, but I wouldn't lay 2-1. Even if it's a couple fights around, we all look back and think that Craig shouldn't even have made the UFC roster or whatnot because he's, you know, can level, whatever we could say. Still, you don't lay 2-1 against a guy like Craig that's going to look to do what he does best and submit Roundtree. So my pick is Roundtree. I do think he probably gets a knockout over Craig. I am not nearly as confident as everybody else out there that's betting Roundtree like he already won the fight, though. So I'll lean Roundtree, but we'll see how it plays out.
If it stays standing, Roundtree should win easily. But if it goes to the ground, Roundtree's in a world of hurt. I mean, just look at his fight against Tyson Pedro. When Roundtree had the fight on the feet, he was blasting Pedro. He had him in so much trouble. But the second that fight went to the ground, Pedro just got on top of him and just started crushing him. So Paul Craig, he is not as quick as Roundtree. He's not as athletic. He's definitely slower. He's a little more lumbering. But if Craig can get this fight to the floor, he has some really solid technical ability on the canvas. Now, when I was watching Craig before he ever made his UFC debut and on film, I didn't think he looked that good. I thought he looked terrible on the feet and that he had a decent ground game. But then he made his UFC debut against Luis Henrique, and he looked amazing. And I was like, holy crap, this guy has gotten so much better. But then he faced Tyson Pedro, and Pedro just crushed him. So I think it was more the fact that I was overvaluing Henrique than undervaluing Craig. So overall, I'm not sure if Craig has the ability to get this fight to the floor. I mean, in his win over Henrique, it was because he was able to outstrike Henrique first and then close the distance and get a submission. There is no way he is outstriking Roundtree. I mean, Roundtree just has to make sure he keeps his distance, doesn't overcommit on major strikes, and he should be able to find a home for some heavy shots. And I think Roundtree doesn't just win, but he probably wins by knockout at some point. I just don't think Craig can keep up with him on the feet, and I don't think Craig can get a hold of him. So my pick is going to be Khalil Roundtree. Now, dropping down to the middleweight division, we have Jack Marshman, who is 21-6, taking on Ryan James, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Marshman -270, the comeback on James at +190. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Marshman -485, the comeback on James +385. So, needless to say, I'm a little bit surprised. I didn't think Marshman was going to get that kind of respect over even a fighter like James that doesn't get a ton of respect out there. I thought 3-1 around that number was fair, and of course it was not. So a lot of people do have a lot of confidence in Marshman. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's never been submitted, and he's facing a jiu-jitsu guy that's going to look to submit him here. So it's basically a similar type of fight that we were just talking about with Roundtree and Craig. But make no mistake, it would be very unfair to call Marshman only a striker. I mean, the guy is a well-rounded, more complete fighter than the guys we were just referring to overall. So I get it. But James is going to have an advantage on the ground. There's no doubt about that. I know it was a little bit surprising in his last fight when he got submitted by Mearshart, especially because the factor James is another submission guy. So most of us thought that that would probably neutralize each other out. But credit Mearshart in getting that slick submission win over there in that matchup. So it was a little bit surprising. But before that fight, James had a pretty decent battle with Barish. And Barish is not exactly a bum. I think he's a pretty tough out. I mean, a powerful guy, strong guy that can do some damage along the way. A lot of like I don't want to say like Marshman, but a lot of similarities. Marshman's a better version, obviously. I mean, Marshman has outstanding striking, really good knockout power. I've been impressed with him. I think he's a warrior. I mean, even outside of the UFC before he made his debut, I've had my eye on Marshman for a while. So I know exactly what kind of fighter you're getting here. He's faced decent competition again before he made the UFC, and he's got that kind of knockout power that really is special. And he's got the fight IQ to go along with it in most cases, but he has been clipped himself and, you know, in some slugfests. He's been put out a little bit, on the feet. I mean, even in his last fight. Now, granted, you got to cut him a little bit of slack because, I mean, he was outsized in that fight, especially in length by Thiago Santos, but Santos was able to knock him out. Outside of that though, it's usually Marshman that does a lot of the KOing. And I mean, that's how special of a striker and a powerful athlete he is. And I think probably happens here again against a guy like James, because Marshman, again, never been subbed. I think his sub defense and his ground awareness is actually fairly decent. And even if you look back at his fight against Seidenblatt, in my opinion, Seidenblatt is a way more dangerous grappler even than James is. And Marshman got put in some vulnerable situations in that fight, and he managed to get out and then have his way on the feet, of course, with Seidenblatt as well. So if Marshman's takedown defense holds up against James, I think he's going to probably do what he does best and make another highlight reel type of knockout from James. So I get it. I understand why people are picking him and betting him a little bit, but I mean, over 3-1, forget it. And it's -485 right now. So it is probably a dog or pass situation, but I'm not interested in betting James in this matchup. I do think that Marshman probably gets the job done here. He's just the more explosive, powerful athlete that will finish the fight on the feet more than likely. So I get it. I just think that do you guys that think it's another sure thing, just, you know, at the price, there's really no value, especially now it's almost 5-1. So stay away from this fight, but I do pick Marshman to win. I think he does get the W out there.
Yeah. Looking at this fight, I just don't know exactly how Jack Marshman is going to lose it. Marshman is the better striker. He has way more power on the feet. He has a little bit better durability, and he hasn't ever been submitted. James has some boxing ability, but for the most part, he's a submission threat, and I just don't think he's good enough on the ground to take advantage of anything that Marshman has to offer. I mean, there's just not enough there. James is a decent enough fighter, but I'm not sure that he's really UFC quality. Like, I think he would right now be in the very bottom tier of the UFC middleweight division. And, I mean, honestly, you got to remember another thing is James is, I believe, moving up. Oh, no, he's not. But I do think that James is just not quite good enough. I mean, he's a little bit bigger, but his striking isn't good enough to take advantage of the reach advantage. So overall, I just think Jack Marshman just walks James down and keeps swinging heavy leather until he connects with something solid and James goes out. I don't think James's wrestling is good enough to put Marshman on his back. And I think Marshman should be able to scramble out of or escape anything that James really throws at him on the ground as well. And James doesn't really have enough power to hurt Marshman like Marshman's last loss. So I like Jack Marshman here. I think that he should win. And while the line is probably out of control, I can understand why people are coming in on Marshman, because there just aren't a lot of outs here for Ryan James. So my pick is going to be Jack Marshman. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Stevie Ray, who is 21-6, taking on Paul Felder, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers perspective on this one?
I opened Felder -130, the comeback on Ray -110. Right now, looking over five dimes, it flipped actually. It's Ray -135. Felder is at +115. So early action coming in on Ray. Ray's definitely been, I think, I don't know if I want to say the hotter fighter, but I think he's got a little bit of momentum on his side, especially with back-to-back wins, even though they were close and controversial to say the least, especially that Lozon fight there. But I mean, he's faced decent competition and he keeps on improving overall because he's facing that high level competition that he's getting in the UFC. Now, not that he wasn't before that, of course, being a Cage Warriors veteran, but still, anytime you make it to the big show, it's definitely a big step up in competition. If you're putting together quality wins in this shark tank that is the lightweight division, It's always impressive. So I do believe that Ray has some momentum on his side. He's got some confidence. And a lot of times, I mean, if you put him in with a guy like Ross Pearson, I mean, Ross Pearson is an incredible striker. We all know what kind of striking ability he has. And Ray was it right in there with him. I mean, he obviously got the W because a lot of people believe he deserved to win that fight. So you can't really argue it. And that's a high level striker in a guy like Pearson. Ray's a little bit more well-rounded than that though as well. I mean, he has the ability to get the fight to the floor usually when he wants. And then on the ground, he's capable of submitting you as well. Kryptonite for Ray does seem to be his takedown defense though. And I mean, in the past, a little bit of his submission defense as well. I think he's addressed some of those submission defense. His ground awareness has definitely gotten better, so he's improved in that area. But his takedown defense, I mean, his fight with Patrick wasn't long ago, and he ended up being placed on his back a little bit too much in that fight. But here against Felder, he's facing another striker. So it's striker versus striker. I think a lot of people think that Ray will just maybe outpace Felder a little bit, and I think he's a little bit more, again, on the upswing compared to Felder, even though Felder hasn't really looked bad. I mean, in fact, his win against Ricci is not an easy guy to finish and stop. And he's actually a pretty solid fighter and coming out and beating him in round one like he did. I mean, I think you got to say a lot for Felder in doing so. I think people are kind of have that out of their heads right now. And before that, of course, he did lose to Ronaldo. Felder has as well. Not that it's a bad loss because Ronaldo has come into his own as well. But I think right now it's just the more popular, the more trendy fighter is Ray. And I think people are probably underestimating Felder here. So I'm going to go his way. I think it will probably be a slugfest. It's going to be close. In my opinion, this is a true type of toss-up fight, especially if it stays standing. Both guys are going to have their moments, no doubt about it. Both the guys are going to land effectively along the way. And I think both these guys can kind of win it on the cards if it goes that far. So it will be a fun striking battle to watch. I think if you look at the wrestling, I honestly think that Felder is a little bit better in that department, though. I think his takedown defense is a little bit better. And I think offensively, if he mixes in a takedown or two, it doesn't even have to be that long. He could probably steal a round or two along the way as well. Now, will he do that with his fight IQ? Will he try to look for takedowns and get the fight to the ground just to steal a round? I'm not sure. Felder's the type of guy that does love getting into wars, so that can play out right into Ray's hands. Not that Ray's going to have an easy time with that, though. So should be a heck of a fight. I'm going to go against the grain here, though. Most people are liking Ray in this fight. I don't know. I think Felder is getting a little bit too much disrespect, and I think he's going to probably come away with a win here. So my pick is going to be Felder to win, and more than likely on the scorecards. But, man, with these guys, I mean, they're both talented strikers. You never know. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all if it ends inside early, but more than likely not. I think it's going to be probably Felder by a very, very tight 29-28, maybe even a split decision type of fight. But I'm going to lean Paul Felder in this one.
With this event taking place in Scotland, I've been unfortunately picking against every Scottish fighter along the way thus far, but I think Stevie Ray has a really good shot here against Felder. Paul Felder is a dynamic striker. He has amazing kicks. He throws a lot of unorthodox spinning attacks, but he's had issues when he faces people that are a little bit more technical and have just solid striking fundamentals, and I think Stevie Ray's one of those guys. Plus, Stevie Ray is, I believe, a southpaw, has really good power in his left hand. I think that's going to confuse Paul Felder. Felder might have the better ground game, and Ray has shown a bit of a weakness to the takedown, but Felder really doesn't pursue takedowns. It's more he just goes to the ground if his opponent takes it there, and then maybe he showcases a little bit of flair with his ground skills, like he did in the Darren Cruikshank fight. But if you just keep going back and back, it seems like every time Felder steps into the cage against somebody that has a good, solid, fundamental striking game, he's had a lot of issues with them. Francisco Trinaldo just put it on him a little bit, ended up getting a doctor stoppage, although that fight was close. But Ross Pearson was able to just push the pace on him a little bit and get in his face and outstrike him, and ended up winning a close decision. Same thing. Edson Barboza was just clearly the better striker when they battled it out. And then even Darren Cruikshank. I mean, Cruikshank was smoking him in the first two rounds and then made a really dumb decision to shoot for a takedown and ended up getting tapped out in the third round. So it just seems like these people that know what they're doing on the feet give Paul Felder a lot of fits. And I think Stevie Ray is a really solid overall striker. These guys do have a common opponent with Ross Pearson. Ray most recently beat Pearson, although again, that was a pretty close decision as well. So I think as long as Stevie Ray doesn't get too crazy, if he stays within himself and then just pushes the pace a little bit and tries to trade technical, more fundamental strikes down the middle, straight punches, for Felder's more looping crazy stuff that he likes to throw, Ray should get the better of Felder on the feet. And I think that he does pick up a win for Scotland here. I just think Ray is the more technically sound pure striker. And as long as he can avoid some of the crazy kicks that Felder throws or the spinning attacks, like he has picked up some wild knockouts in the past, Ray should be in a decent shape. So my pick is actually going to be Stevie Ray. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division for the co-main event of the evening, we have Joanne Calderwood, who is 11-2, taking on Cynthia Calvillo, who is 5-0. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Calvillo -215, the comeback on Calderwood at +165. It is Calvillo -210, the comeback on Calderwood +175. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming into this fight. Early on, it was all Calvillo. They got bet up a little bit. Now, of course, as we get closer to fight time, Calderwood's getting some love back, especially at that dog price. It's tough. You don't see Calderwood as an underdog like this too often at all. I mean, or somebody getting that much respect against her. Calvillo definitely deserves it, though. I mean, obviously, she's a fan favorite. Even Dana White had a lot of good things to say about her after her couple brilliant performances thus far in the UFC. So the sky's the limit for her. I know, I mean, a lot of people believe that she's a well-rounded fighter that's going to continue to improve, and she is just that for sure. Calderwood, on the other hand, she is pretty much well-rounded. I mean, you got to give her some credit for sure, because even though she's more known for her striking ability, she can put the fight to the ground. She has decent wrestling. Now, she doesn't really look to submit a lot of girls, but so that is definitely a flaw for her. I mean, her submission defense and her wrestling could improve even more, but she is a well-rounded fighter. I wouldn't consider her just a striker, but that is definitely what she excels at more. She's going to have a little bit of length over Calvillo on the feet as well. So her edge is keeping this fight upright and trying to be aggressive and trying to put that power of Calderwood. Because let's face it, there's not a lot of ladies that can get the finish on the feet. Calderwood is not one of those. She can definitely string together some good, you know, punches and kicks and make things interesting and do some damage and probably get some of the female fighters out of there. Calvillo is going to be tough to do. She's got that warrior spirit for sure in her. She's not going to be easy. An easy target on the feet, that is. So I think Calvillo's boxing is getting better. Her movement's pretty decent as well. She's got some quickness that Calderwood's going to have to deal with on the feet. But I think her game plan, Calvillo's, is definitely going to be trying to exploit Calderwood on the ground. I mean, that's where I think so far we've seen a little bit more I think benefits to her game so far in Calvillo's career. I think if she's able to get Calderwood on the ground, most people are thinking she probably takes her back and maybe finishes her by sub. I think that's a very possible situation here as well. I know that this is a very good matchup to make because I think the winner here definitely takes a huge step up that ladder at 115 pounds. And I think for Calvillo, especially if she gets that win, I mean, having a win over Calderwood does a lot of good things for your career as well. So I get it. I get the matchmaking and everything. It's going to be a tough fight for both ladies, but I do lean with Calvillo. I think she is the better fighter right now as far as her ability to kind of adapt. If she's not doing so well on the feet, she could probably scramble and get this fight to the ground and then do some damage and probably get the submission underground as well. So I think this is pretty clear to me, meaning that this is a fight set up for Calvillo to get the win over a solid opponent like Calderwood and get her kind of skyrocketing up the rankings a little bit more. So I think that probably happens here. I think Calvillo does get the finish and it happens on the ground. So it's going to be pretty impressive. And man, I'm going to have to see where the hype goes after this one if she does get the win. So my pick is Calvillo, and more than likely, I think she's going to get it done by sub over a very game Calderwood.
Watching Calvillo's last fight against Pearl Gonzalez, I was not that impressed with her striking. It didn't seem like she packed much heat behind her punches, and Pearl Gonzalez wasn't having that much issue with her in the stand-up, although Calvillo was throwing way more while she was backing up. I mean, she was throwing combination after combination after combination, and while it looked pretty, it wasn't really doing much. I mean, she was just hitting Gonzalez's guard repeatedly, and she wasn't really doing any damage. That being said, she was able to keep up a pretty high pace, and then when the second the fight went to the floor, it became a completely different story. Calvillo is so aggressive on the ground, and she makes things happen. She is a dynamic grappler. She is able to transition very effectively. She passes guard. She sweeps. She goes for submissions. And she's ruthless once she gets a hold of something. So that is definitely something to look out for here, because Calvillo might have one of the more dangerous ground games in the entire women's strawweight division. I mean, she is phenomenal there. And she's still learning on the feet. I mean, she's going to get better. But at this point, if she just is not able to get this fight to the floor, I think Joanne Calderwood could really mess her up. I mean, Calderwood is scary good when she gets a little bit of space to operate. She has really powerful kicks. She has heavy hands, and she has some devastating knees and elbows if she can close the distance. So there are going to be opportunities here for Calderwood to make some things happen on the feet, but she needs to make those things happen in a hurry, because the second this fight goes to the floor, I think Calderwood is in huge trouble. Calderwood has showcased very poor submission defense in the past. I know that the ground game is something that she's been working on, but on The Ultimate Fighter, Rose Namajunas ate her for lunch with a Kimura off of her back, and then Marina Moroz bull rushed her in her UFC debut and was able to get an armbar quickly. And then again, more recently, Jessica Andrade bull rushed her and was able to get a submission victory quickly. So the path to victory is obvious for Calvillo. It's just a matter of, can she close the distance and get this fight to the floor before Calderwood does some damage on the feet? And I think that Calvillo should be able to do that. I mean, Calderwood is a very dangerous striker, but I don't know if she has quite enough just one-punch knockout ability to land that one big shot. Although, if Calvillo is obvious with her takedowns, a knee could do it. But barring something crazy like that happening, I think Calvillo does drag this fight to the floor, and I think Calvillo does get a submission at some point. So my pick is going to be Cynthia Calvillo as well. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the welterweight division for five rounds, we have Gunnar Nelson, who is 16-2-1, taking on Santiago Ponzinibbio, who is 24-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Nelson -270, the comeback on Ponzinibbio at +190, and action has come in on the underdog, Ponzinibbio. The current line over at Five Dimes right now is Nelson -160, the comeback on Ponzinibbio +140. And there was just in the last day or so, there was a little bit more action coming in Nelson's way, or I should say Ponzinibbio's way, to drop the price a little bit. I mean, it's tough because I could see it going both ways, obviously. I mean, Nelson, in my opinion, is one of the best welterweights in the world, and he's been for a long time. I mean, he's one of the toughest outs. I think he's got a bright future, and I would expect him to kind of, you know, be in the mix for a title shot for a while. And Ponzinibbio is just trying to make himself relevant enough to climb that ladder and get in the mix of that title shot as well. And I'm saying that because not that Ponzinibbio has just fought a bunch of bums and haven't performed well. He's been great. I mean, if you look at his wins, that's fine. But, I mean, they're really good. They're really solid wins. But what I'm trying to get at here is we don't really, none of us. I mean, you could just think about it. Have you ever thought of Ponzinibbio being in title contention? Really not the case. Have you thought of Nelson? And that's probably different. I mean, you can picture Nelson getting that shot. That's how close he is. And the ability of Nelson to get the fight to the ground and then do what he does best with his grappling is unbelievable, really, in most cases, because he's able. I think he's one of the best grapplers, even though he doesn't have the traditional wrestling game. I mean, he's able with his wrestling, with his takedowns, to get the fight to the ground more times than not. I think he's one of the best takedown artists at 170 pounds as well. And mix that in with his grappling ability and submission ability, he's one of the toughest outs in the whole weight class. Now, of course, Ponzinibbio's takedown defense has always been solid, and it actually keeps on improving. So that's scary for a lot of people, because he's basically known as a striking-based fighter that has technical but clear, powerful striking ability as well. I mean, if you look again, the resume that he's kind of established here, even in his loss, his recent loss, I mean, you got to go all the way back to 2015, his fight with Larkin, where he ended up getting knocked out in that second fight, or in the second round, I should say. I mean, that was a pretty good war before he got caught in that fight as well. So he faced high level competition like that. And that was kind of his only blemish as of late. Everybody else he's kind of rolled through, including a very capable fighter. And I don't want to say similar fighter to Nelson, but a guy like Zach Cummings, for example, which has some good takedown skill and has good ability to get the fight once on the floor and end it with submission. So he faced a similar competitor to Nelson and Zach Cummings. Of course, obviously Nelson has a win over Cummings as well, but that being said, he followed that up with a pretty impressive win over Talib, and Talib's no joke either. So Ponzinibbio has put together an impressive resume. He's definitely one of the best strikers, I think, at 170 pounds and one of the best guys to keep the fight where he wants it on the feet. So really good takedown defense. And his cardio is decent enough that if this fight does drag out and goes into deeper waters, he actually should have an edge over Nelson. So he's got some good things going for him here with his takedown defense, with his cardio, with his striking ability. No doubt, it's not going to be an easy fight. So I do understand why some of the early action comes in on Nelson. I mean, let's say like it is. Nelson early on is going to be a beast. He probably does get this fight to the ground. And once on the floor, is Ponzinibbio going to survive against Nelson's grappling game? I mean, he's never been submitted before in his career. So there's a possibility that he does, even with the high level of jiu-jitsu that Nelson brings to the table here. I mean, Ponzinibbio is definitely game. He knows what to expect here. He knows he's probably going to try to get Nelson's going to try to put him on his back. So I guarantee his game planning for this has been pretty good, and he's going to be ready for it. And the thing with Nelson is, again, as you take it round by round, if he can't get Ponzinibbio finished in round one or round two, round three is going to get a little bit interesting. I think he's going to start slowing down a little bit, and maybe possibly round four and round five, and it'll be a really close competitive decision if it does go all the way to the scorecard. So we're talking about maybe another possibility of a split decision type of fight. But if anybody can finish a guy like Ponzinibbio on the ground that has pretty decent sub-defense and takedowns defense, is a guy like Nelson. I mean, he's an elite-level grappler. So all that stuff that I just said, I still lean a little bit more towards Nelson doing what he does best. I mean, if you look at some of his performances, I think one of, I guess, the blemishes from him recently, at least, has been the Damian Maia fight when he lost that fight by decision. Early on in the fight, he was doing really good. It's just the ability and the grappling ability of Damian Maia to push such a high pace for Nelson early on kind of wore him out. And then Damian Maia started taking control of that fight and now grappled Nelson. You don't see that happen too often, but that's a special elite grappler like Maia. So I think that's where the conditioning aspect comes into play. I think if Nelson's conditioning was a little bit better, and again, you got to credit Maia for that, I think he possibly could have had more success in that fight. But a fight everybody's going to kind of look back to is the Rick Story fight. That was another fight that was a 5-round fight, main eventer that went all 5 rounds. And obviously Story was able to keep the fight upright and do some damage along the way against Nelson on the feet. So I think that was a tough test. And a lot of people might be comparing the two. Like, look, Ponzinibbio does have some decent takedown defense. Look what Story was able to do on the feet with Nelson. We think that Ponzinibbio can possibly repeat that. I'm not so sure. I think Nelson has improved a little bit. I think Nelson's going to bring more than just his grappling to the table. I mean, let's not forget the ability that he has with his unorthodox, a little bit of karate striking that Nelson brings to the table. He's precise with it. He's got some power with that as well. So it's not only that Nelson can beat you really on the ground. You can't count him out exactly on the feet. So even though Ponzinibbio has the edge on the feet, he has been knocked out a couple times, and Nelson has enough knockout power that he could definitely do some damage along the way too. So in my opinion, this is Nelson's fight to win or lose. If he fights smart, if his conditioning is intact, he's going to win this fight because he's going to get the takedowns. He's either going to get the submission once he gets the takedowns or possibly even finish this fight with prominent position on the ground, you know, and dropping some bombs on the floor as well. Or he can possibly outpoint him and grind out a 3-2 type of decision as far as rounds go over Ponzinibbio as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about this fight. I'm excited about it. I think both these guys are definitely worthy of headlining, and especially an event like this, a fight night event, because you have two of the best welterweights in the world going out of here, and stylistically, it's an interesting matchup to say the least. So early on, I can understand it's a dog or pass situation, but where it's at now, it's probably almost a favorite or pass situation with Gunnar Nelson. I mean, if the price keeps dropping, it's definitely that case. So right now, it's almost borderline for me around -160, +140. So great fight. Looking forward to it. I think Nelson's going to keep on doing what he does best, get the fight to the floor and probably win it that way. So my pick is going to be Gunnar Nelson to defeat Ponzinibbio and possibly by submission.
I was really encouraged by Gunnar Nelson's most recent fight against Alan Joban because I think that fight's a bit similar to what he's facing here. Now, obviously, Ponzinibbio is a little bit more dangerous on the feet than Joban. Ponzinibbio has a better chin, but Nelson took on a guy that was longer than him, that had a good striking background, and wanted to keep the fight standing. And Nelson was very patient on the feet, looking for openings, and then he would shoot in with a very deceptive takedowns, and he was aggressively looking to get that fight to the floor. And he was able to do it in the first round, although, and he passed through Joban's guard like butter, and Joban does have a pretty underrated ground game. He wasn't able to get the finish in the first round, but in the second round, Nelson just cracked Joban with a beautiful right hand, and then was able to just hop on a submission immediately. And that's not the first time he's done something like that. When he fought Brandon Thatch, he also hurt him on the feet first before finishing him on the ground. So that's something that Ponzinibbio really has to respect. Nelson is not a one-trick pony. He does not just look for takedowns and submissions. He's going to be looking to find an opening on the feet, too, to potentially set up a submission. So Gunnar Nelson is a very, very talented, well-rounded fighter. And I think that he's learned a lot from that loss to Rick Story the last time he had a main event-type fight. Ponzinibbio is a guy that I have a ton of respect for. I mean, he fights long. He has a lot of activity on the feet. He's aggressive. He has pretty good overall takedown defense, especially considering how in his UFC debut, he took on Ryan LaFlair and got put on his back just over and over and over again. And ever since then, he has been a nightmare to get to take down. So Nelson is going to have his work cut out for him, trying to get this fight to the floor. And Ponzinibbio has some pretty good power. Now, I don't know if he has the ability to finish Nelson on the feet. That might be overstating it a little bit. But, I mean, Ponzinibbio was able to finish Court McGee. He was able to outstrike and earn upset decisions over guys like Zach Cummings. So I definitely feel like this is a guy that deserves his place right now in the welterweight division. And there is potential for him to get a win here. If Nelson works too hard to get a takedown and gasses himself out a little bit, Ponzinibbio could just take over. Ponzinibbio has a strong, I mean, he lands twice as many strikes per minute as Nelson does. So he has the ability to just outpoint Nelson and win judges' scorecards that way. He doesn't have to knock Nelson out. He also is a guy that has a pretty good pace that he's able to keep up, and he's able to utilize his conditioning pretty well. I mean, he hasn't really had an issue where he gassed out in fights. So I know that this is Ponzinibbio's first 5-round fight, but he hasn't had an issue in 3-round fights before, so I'm not really overly concerned about it. I mean, Gunnar Nelson's the one that should be a little bit worried. I mean, he slowed down quite a bit in the Story fight that he lost. He also slowed down a lot in the Damian Maia fight. So if Ponzinibbio can just keep a high tempo and force Gunnar Nelson to work for everything, there is a possibility that Nelson just slows down to the point that he can't get any offense going. I mean, he's the kind of guy that relies a lot on explosiveness, getting in, landing that one crisp shot on the feet, and then taking advantage of openings. So if Nelson starts to get tired, he's not going to be able to do that. That being said, I really do like the improvements that Nelson has made. And while I do see a very clear path to victory for Ponzinibbio, I think Nelson is advanced enough that he does find a way to get this fight to the floor, whether it be with a knockdown or with a takedown. And I do see Gunnar Nelson getting a submission stoppage at some point. So my pick is going to be Gunnar Nelson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 113. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Saturday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.